Yeah, g'day everyone. Welcome back to the Tripod Live with Winnie and Clarky. We are live now on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, which is just starting up in a moment. Welcome to everyone who is ready to view this show. We are going to recap our best bets and all the action from round five. I am back. I missed the last few episodes whilst overseas traveling. And Winnie, it was a weird old round of footy. Now, I know for myself personally, I made a few plays around what was promised to be torrential rain and wet weather footy the whole round, but that really cleared up and come around to bite me a little bit in the end. But a strange round, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I got bitten at the very end of that round, but it's good to have you back, mate. I want to ask you about your trip, but maybe we get a highlight or two at the end of the show, and hopefully you being back can turn our luck, because it was a very poor round for me, and I was feeling positive coming into even into today. If the Eels cover the line and we got 2.5 and it closes at a pick'em, I would have been a 2-2 round. We're in a strong position with the mixed matchup. We had 30 points to defend going down into Canberra. Canberra's total was set like 21. So could have still been a profitable round, but it wasn't even close. The Eels got blown out, and that's how it swings. So then it goes to a 1-3 round, which is not good by any measure. You lose the mixed matchup when, as I said, it was like a $1.27 favorite. And it wipes out like a month's worth of profit. I looked at the profit loss, and it's a -$1 right now. So, and of course, the same game that didn't win on Friday or today. So that really hurts. That's one of those rounds that you're going to get, but you hope you don't get too many of them. But it's just as important of a recap. In fact, I know sometimes more people tune into these more than ever. It's important for us to figure out where we might have gone wrong, and also just to ride the lows of the season as much as we do the highs.
And that's the thing. At the end of the day, it's we wouldn't shy away from it. You can't get every bet correct. I had a stinker today. I couldn't help myself but put a little bit on my Titans. You can see I'm wearing the membership hat now. And I was with you on the Eels all the way, mate. I didn't expect that. We've got roughly 70 people on Instagram, so g'day to all of you. Over on Facebook, we've got Jeremy, and Sora is with us on YouTube. So g'day to everyone, no matter where you're watching us. Winnie, did you want to recap the best bets here and now at the start, or did you want to go through game by game on touching them as we go?
We'll get to them when we go game by game.
Perfect. Let's rewind to Thursday night, where the Melbourne Storm defeated the Brisbane Broncos at Amy Park, 34-32. They've got a great record over the Broncos at the venue, and they do continue that streak. But this is a game where I'm certain both sides were sustaining multiple heart attacks if you're the fan, right? But ultimately, it's the Broncos that it ends in heartbreak, because they shown a lot of heart. They were right in this. They came in under strength. They lost probably their best player in Adam Reynolds in the first half, but they just didn't give up. And from a betting perspective, I have to say, it's horrible for the Storm to not cover the line here against a Reynoldless Broncos side in that second half. I really expected the Storm to kick on. But for the Storm, I still think they're probably short of middle forward, so that they'll be really wanting Nelson Asafa-Solomona to kick it up a level in reserve grade and be back for them. They'll probably look back at this game and just think, oh, well, we got the win, but we were not impressive at all. Whereas the Broncos can actually look at this game and go, look, there's a lot of positives besides us not getting the two competition points. But look, this is great for Kevin Walters. You know, he's a coach that, Winnie, there's all these records that are bad against the Broncos for the last few years. And then there's all these, you know, big games like against the Cowboys last week at Suncorp. And Kevin Walters is always getting his team up. And I think this is another game where he can kind of build the culture off the back of it and go, boys, missing key players, no captain and halfback in the second half. And we were in it against an almost full-strength Storm side. So a close game to the end and throughout. I really enjoyed this one. How did you see it? And who did you have as it was coming down that final stretch?
So my best bet was Storm -5.5. So you kick off the weekend with a loss. And I feel like I got what I expected out of Melbourne. Coming in off a bye, a bit fresher. You know, Munster played, Hughes was back. And Melbourne played well enough to win the game and to win by more than a try and to put on enough points. But you have to give so much credit to Brisbane. They come in under strength. And then, as you say, like, even though Brisbane took a lead into the break, when Reynolds was out with the hammy, I fully expected that the Storm were going to kick on. And I look, if we had covered the line here, I would not have said that proves the tip is right. I would have said we got lucky there, because Melbourne actually did score a couple of tries in the final 10 minutes and get the lead. It got out to eight points, I think. Yeah, got that lead, you know, ahead of the line, even the line that it closed later in the week beyond the converted try. And I thought, we've got in the back door here, you know, and I'll take it. But it was a weird game to assess because I feel like everything that could have possibly gone right for Brisbane did go right early. They scored some freaky tries. And part of it is a bit of luck, but part of it is the courage to play that way. You know, that was the common thread from Brisbane beating the Cowboys by 20 at Suncorp, coming down to Melbourne, although they don't even win, they played enterprising footy, and you've got to hand it to them because missing their best attacking players, it doesn't matter, the likes of Tristan Saylor is going to go out there and throw a double cutout. And what I had to admire from Brisbane was even when they were in front, they never tried to protect the lead. They were always willing to play footy, and that just made this such an entertaining game. So from a neutral perspective, or even if you were on my best bet, like, you've got a good run for your money, and it was a thrilling game, and it was back and forth. But first half, I felt like, yeah, Brisbane's scoring, like, they get an intercept, and I think, I don't know if they score directly, but intercept, tackle, try. They score like a fifth tackle play that goes from the left side to the right, all the way back to the left and score. It seemed like they couldn't put a foot wrong, the Broncos, and the Storm, when they got a half break, Brisbane scrambled. So credit to Brisbane for covering those up. But in the second half, not only did Brisbane have to play without Reynolds, Brisbane muffed a couple of tries. You had Arthurs just puts one down cold. You have another where Brisbane makes a break and they could basically choose who to throw it to score. And I think it's Billy Walters maybe goes short from dummy half and they spill it like on zero tackle. And then Melbourne hits the front. You're going, oh, geez, Brisbane's kind of bombed this. And from the perspective of getting the 2 points, Brisbane will rue those missed opportunities second half. But to even be in the game was impressive. And Melbourne's obviously got to tighten up their defence a bit. But it was just one of those games where everything clicked for everybody with the footy for the most part.
And as John Pearce says on Facebook, the Broncos just never go away. And that was the thing. They never went away. And I sat there and thought some of their tries, well, that was a bit lucky. But the facts are they were there. The effort was there. And they were rewarded for that ultimately in that one. Heartbreaking finish for me, mate. I was on Storm minus 5.5 with a Coates anytime try. I was watching with a friend and I said, don't celebrate yet. The last 5 minutes is the most nervous when it comes to Lions. Sure enough, Ben Dakura scores a try that in the context of the match.
After a regathered kickoff as well, and you kind of feel like, you know, I'm one possession away from maybe covering that. But had Melbourne covered, you know, I don't think we'd be in any position to say we had the right bet, especially when you consider that, like, Reynolds was wiped out at halftime. It still hurts, though. Yeah, the tallest man to ever play the game was the one who crashed over at the end.
Yeah, it sucks when you get so close, especially when we almost got away with it because we both admit the Storm didn't deserve to cover the line. They weren't at their best there. Let's go to Friday night. Now, this might be the strangest game of football I've ever had to review. And I took my notes at halftime, and it is so bad against the Roosters. But I've only got a couple of points after it because the script got completely flipped here. I'm talking Bulldogs defeating the Roosters 30-26 at Accor Stadium. An unbelievable start by the Bulldogs here. The Roosters were in all sorts after the Bulldogs. They scored a try off their very first touch, I believe, from that scrum. And it just rattled the Roosters. They were like, oh, my God, that's not meant to happen. Mentally, their heads dropped. You could tell they weren't in it. Fast forward, Walker goes down. Young is sent off. Teddy is ruled out. So there goes half their spine, and they're playing a man down. They were just getting basic things wrong, like not wrapping up the footy, allowing an offload that went to a try. And, you know, you can't really break it down from a technical perspective because the Roosters were just so poor. They knew they would have been poor, and it just was not working for them. The fact they were able to come back with 12 men in the second half, I don't want to use the word bad. I'll use inexperience. It shows how inexperienced the Bulldogs are. Like, there's not many sides that are going to concede that many points in a row against 12 men. There just isn't. Like, maybe the Titans, Bulldogs, and the Rabbitohs with how they're playing. But that's really bad stuff by the Doggies. And in the end, I don't think either side would have got to full time and been happy with this because it was a game of two halves where both sides were absolutely terrible either side of that half. What I will say, my personal opinion, I thought the Roosters were a little bit unlucky. I didn't think Victor Radley should have been sin-binned, and that was kind of a crucial moment. They needed to not have 11 men on the field, I guess. But yeah, a crazy injury toll coming out of this one for both sides. Absolute carnage for both sides next week, where I expect they'll both be significant underdogs. What did you make of this absolutely strange game of footy?
Can I put it back on you? Can you list the injury toll? Do you have it in front of you? Obviously, Teddy's going to be ruled out and Walker because they're both going to get the 11 days. Taff will be the same story. Harrison Edwards Oh, there's a couple with a broken hand for the Bulldogs. I think Kurt Mann as well. Yeah, Dom Max Young King. Will obviously get suspended. Radley wasn't charged. I agree. Max King too, fractured hand. Radley, which goes to show, probably shouldn't have been a sin bin. And that is pretty critical because the Roosters had to fight the last 10 minutes of this game with 11 and still had a chance to steal it, which makes this a very tough game to assess. So first things first, I had a best bet of Roosters -9.5, and I couldn't see how they could lose this one. And after starting down 14-0 to Penrith, I really thought if they can remedy the start, they won't take the Dogs lightly because they have been patchy and inconsistent, and there should be too much class. And the weather was a factor too, as Nothing But Pancake says the line closed 35.5. It was torrential. And if you had unders, you're a bit unlucky that the Roosters no-showed. And it's 26-0 to the Dogs early. Now, it was basically 18-0 to the Dogs. It was 18-0 to the Dogs before Dom Young sent off. So even when he got sent, I'm like, well, the Roosters are toast here. That wouldn't have been an excuse for the best bet. Like, they'd already done the damage, the Dogs. So you have to give credit to Canterbury, and they played the conditions. They were just far more forceful and fierce and on the back of Burton's kicking game. And the Roosters seemed to, leave it in the dressing sheds. They just weren't there, which was very shocking to me. And I'm reflecting, going, what is it? Am I a Rooster lover? I know people are saying, you're always backing the Roosters. Like, obviously, got it wrong last week. I'm never afraid to back a team a couple times in a row if that's how I see it. But I'm going, why do I rate this team? Am I seeing names like Keary and Manu and Teddy, but they're not the players that they once were? I don't know, because for me, it's such a stacked team. But then when you watch what the Roosters were able to do in the second half and come back from 26-0 and get it within a try twice and play the final 50 minutes with 12 men, but the final 10 with 11 men, then I kind of feel like I wouldn't say I'm vindicated, because if I pick a team to win -9.5, they don't even win. I don't want any credit. But in my mind, I'm like, well, if they could have had anywhere near that level of application and desperation, the Roosters, that they applied in the second half, they probably would have won by double digits. And it is a case as well that I don't want to give the Roosters too much credit, although they went close to what would have been one of the greatest comeback wins of all time, like in a regular season NRL game. I think equal share of the blame pie has to go to the Bulldogs, who probably did switch off and feel they had it won. Because, it's that mental thing of having an extra player and a big lead. You just feel that way. You're not attacking the game anymore. So I do think it's like you said, coming out of the game, Keary said it himself, we're embarrassed of starting that way rather than we're proud of how we finished it. Robinson did say he's proud as well. But if you're the Dogs, you almost have to feel sheepish and have to feel partially like it's a loss, because it's a very woeful second half to allow the Roosters to get a sniff is diabolical. And you've nearly turned into one of the capitulations of all time, but you get away with it this time. The Dogs are just doing just enough at the front end of the game. So it is a tricky one to assess. And just as important also is the personnel ramifications that come out of it, mostly injuries as well as the suspension.
Yeah, Colt from YouTube says Dogs ambushed Chooks at the start. They were rampant. I agree. The Chooks forward pack in wet conditions was being bullied. Like, they weren't able to go forward, and it was something just was seriously off of that Roosters side at the start. They were not the same team we saw against the Rabbitohs. The injury toll for the Bulldogs, Viliami Kikau suspected fracture in his leg. Max King Kurt Mann confirmed fractures in their hands. Connor Tracy to have scans on a torn calf. Harrison Edwards, possible bulging disc in the neck. Blake Taff knocked out, won't be there next week, as will James Tedesco and Sam Walker. So, carnage. Absolute carnage.
That is a very costly victory. And it's one comment there that the Panthers stole the Roosters' soul. I did see a funny comment. Someone commented, Roosters lost to the Panthers B grade or reserve grade side 2 weeks in a row. Because they lost to the Roosters, they lost to the Panthers with no Cleary and Fish, and then they lost to the Bulldogs, who is kind of like a Panther feeder team, if you like. So, look, Roosters have somehow dropped to 2-3 as well. Yeah, you're going to look for positives, and there's some to be taken from that fight back. But That start was absolutely horrendous, and it dropped me straight into an 0-2 hole. And again, on a bit of reflection, I want to be fair. Like, if I get it wrong. But I'm like, geez, Storm played pretty well. I just think I underestimated how good Brisbane were. And if I underestimate that, you know, so be it. I'll play that Storm play again. And then the Roosters side, it's like, if you don't spot a team 26 points and a man, then maybe we don't have a problem here. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there wasn't enough desperation or respect shown to the opponent. They got what they deserved out of it.
And that's the issue with this Roosters side. They're not a team that we're looking at for positive each week. We're not looking for little signs of improvement, for example. They're a side that we fully expect to contend for the premiership. So I don't think they will take many positives from this at all. And as you said, I was the same, mate. Coming into this one, I didn't see a world where the Bulldogs got the win here against the Chooks. But let's move on to the next Friday night game. It was the Knights defeating the Dragons up there in Newcastle, 30-10. For me, it was really tough to take too much away from this game, given the insane weather conditions. I'd say this was the most torrential rain we had all round. And I suppose you can say the Knights are more clinical, but we kind of already knew that on paper and on form coming into this game. And wet weather conditions are just crazy, right? Like, the Panthers lost to the Tigers last year, who went on to win the Spoon, whilst the other went on to win the Premiership. In torrential rain. It's just an entirely different beast and a different style of footy. The difference between both sides and where the Knights came out on top for me was Kalyn Ponga. Now, he created every opportunity for the Knights, but they were measured opportunities. I felt like the Dragons probably lacked that big game player. Usually it's Ben Hunt, but he wasn't able to be that guy in the wet weather conditions. Tyrell Sloan tried and failed. Zach Lomax had a few nice touches, and because they didn't have that star take over the game for them, they tried to force the issue a bit. Missing that big game player. And that's shown through their 10 offloads, which was awesome, but it also led to a lot of silly errors and a 65% completion rate, which, needless to say, is far too low to win a wet weather game of footy. You put yourself under pressure, a quality player like KP capitalizes, and what you have here is a Knights victory by 20 points. How did you see this one? And did you have Kalyn Ponga as your MVP also?
For sure. And the thing is, while we did cash the best bet here, and I took Knights -6. And again, I was a little bit nervous about the weather because it was probably even more torrential than I anticipated. But the funny thing is, you go back to even that was the case for the early Friday game, but there was in excess of 50 points, you know. And then in this game, well, this game goes over the closing total. But if people had actually smashed unders early in the week, anticipating the rain, you did sneak under. And the reason for that is, because there were 6 tries in the first half, but only 1 try after the 35th minute. So it kept you the total of this game to 40. And I did see a screenshot. Some people played as high as 42.5, but that total come in like 8 points because it was bucketing down in Newcastle. But it is crazy. Like, we know that rain suppresses scoring, right? But the point I'm getting to is this cost us the same game multi because I had Knights 13-15. I mean, they got to 15 and doubled that, and the Dragons didn't get beyond 10. I had Ponga to score, but I had under 6.5 tries, and there are 7 tries in the game, and there were 6 in the first 35 minutes. It's just one of those things where, you know, often the rain is going to lead to mistakes, but it's like, where are the mistakes made? Is it going to be defenders slipping over? Is it going to be a loose ball from attacking kicks, or is it going to be teams that just can't execute chances? And it seems like, of course, the rain just seemed to lead to plenty of opportunities to score. The first is Cogger back in the first grade side and getting on a loose ball to score first. So it was actually a pretty competitive game until the Knights got a couple quick fire and quick succession and then really just strangled Dragons out second half. And I think that goes back to the crux of why I made the Knights a best bet, higher level of desperation. You know, and in really tough conditions, it doesn't really matter the ability of either side or who's playing as much as which team is more desperate. And in front of their home fans, you know, these people, if they're going to come out in that kind of weather, all you have to do is deliver effort and make the fans proud of the work that you're willing to put in to get the 2 points. So Newcastle did that, didn't give the Dragons really any opportunity second half. That hurts a little bit because I think that same game, yeah, was $10, you know, and we miss out by half a try. But again, that's how it goes. What can you do when you get that amount of scoring in those type of conditions?
Yeah, and it's one of those things. You can't predict it. Like, you know, as much as people will sit there and as Liv jokes here saying, you're sending me broke, like, no one would be sitting there confidently saying there's going to be more than seven tries in this game when you saw that weather. I took Chuala, anytime try scorer here, in this one, a Knights minus 5.5. So I did manage to cash my bet, but the whole time I was thinking, like, why have I taken a winger in these conditions? It was a silly bet. I got away with it. But unfortunately, we didn't get away with our same game multi. Very, very unlucky there, missing by half a try. I see a lot of comments rolling through on Instagram, and I did see some on YouTube as well asking how the Titans are. Don't worry, we will get to that, unfortunately. But before we get to that, let's get to the Warriors defeating the Rabbitohs at Accor Stadium, 34-4, and wow. The Rabbitohs, they're just in such a dark spot here. Now, they're a side I had missing finals this year, but even I concede, I did not expect them to play this poorly throughout the start of their season. Realistically, outside of the first 5 minutes, this is a side that did not look dangerous. And this is that's an issue because even sides that are right down the bottom of the ladder, like my Titans, the Dragons, Bulldogs, etc., they are still showing positive signs for longer than this Rabbitohs side was able to do this week, only showing positivity for maybe 5 minutes. Look, my analysis for this one is they were bullied. They were bullied by a much better team. The Warriors were more physical. They played sharper, crisper. Any buzzwords you want to throw out, the Warriors were better. The 60% completion rate for South was horrible. That could be the lowest I've seen in a while. They made a massive 16 errors. They conceded six penalties. And the issue is, Winnie, some of those penalties just weren't necessary. Like, they just, like the Latrell Mitchell one where he lifted the legs when the tackle was complete. Like, why? Your side just does not need that when they're already struggling. We go to the Rabbitohs' last 20 games, rather. They've only got 5 wins. So they have just fallen off a cliff because I remember last year, you and I were so keen on that Bunny side for a top 4 finish. And that's when we started to hear the rumblings of Sam Burgess saying certain players are getting favoritism. They removed all those assistant coaches and put all their trust in Jason Demetrio. So the Rabbitohs have a very, very tough decision to make in the next few weeks coming up. But realistically, for the Warriors, you can't say anything but positives. I love seeing Charles Nicol Klukstad back. His activity and his backline timing was really brilliant. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, he chimed in nicely. Their halves looked dangerous throughout. It was a really comprehensive performance. And the challenge for the Warriors, Winnie, for me, becomes wiping this from the memory and resetting for Manly next week back at home because the Roosters pumped the Bunnies. They then dropped their next game, as did the Broncos in round 3. The Bunnies have this theme so far this season of giving sides false confidence, and they come into the next week a little bit undercooked. So the Warriors don't want to fall into that trap, but they do want to take some confidence away from it. What was a huge win here. Would you agree with my assessment on this one?
Yeah, missed opportunity for me because the Warriors were slight road favourites. So I didn't feel like it was a cheap line, just based on the ability of both sides. I felt like, oh yeah, the Rabbitohs is a home underdog. Could be frisky here. They alleviated some pressure getting that win. But I blame myself really because I watched that game on Good Friday really closely and came out of it just completely unconvinced that the Rabbitohs have got it going this year because I feel like the Dogs let the Rabbitohs off the hook massively and a couple of big moments went their way. So what I really needed to appreciate going into this game was that there was still every possibility that the Rabbitohs had a rotten core. And that, how should I say, that extra just percentage chance meant that you should have just played New Zealand. And even if the Rabbitohs had turned up and played their best game, it would have been close. But my assumption for some reason was that the Rabbitohs will get things back on track and will fight hard in this one. And that just wasn't the case. So you kind of got a free win if you played New Zealand. Although the Rabbitohs scored first, once New Zealand got on top, like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's only like 6-4 after half an hour or something. So it wasn't obvious, like, straight away that the Rabbitohs had no-showed. But I think the mark of a mentally feeble team is to allow those quick fire tries. And New Zealand gets in bang, bang, like just before half time. And it's already a mountain to climb, like 18-4 halftime score and come out. And their heads are not in the game. And you talk about penalties they gave, and that doesn't even include like Latrell throwing that elbow at Johnson because the ref missed that. That would have been a killer penalty to give away. And there's comments about what suspension he should have got. He's been given 3 weeks. But as I heard mentioned, like if that causes more damage on Johnson, if that breaks his jaw, you know, then Latrell's going to sit out half the season. So also heard it speculated that there may not be the worst thing for Souths, but isn't that an indictment on the Bunnies and on Latrell if their best player, best ability and highest paid player being out could make them play better? Then that says a lot. But this fella Gray is carving up in New South Wales Cup. Tyrell Munro still injured perhaps. In any case, I think they give the fella Gray a start and see how he goes for 3 weeks. And if he's killing it, then when the Latrell comes back, the Latrell's going to be playing in the centres. And I'd suggest then you got to move White into the halves. Like, you've got to shake it up. I was looking on my phone before who have Rabbitohs got next week. It's at Cronulla. You know, yep. And that's a Cronulla team off a bye, right? Like, Demetrio might only have one more game if he's not relieved of his duties this week, honestly, because that was an appalling loss. But for the Warriors, that's impressive. Like, that's a mark of a good Warriors team that can come and take the show on the road, because I do feel like they're always playing with spirit at Mount Smart. But it was Rogers' 200th game. He got a try. And the Warriors looked very sharp and very hard to beat with the return of Nicol Klukstad, who got stood up for the first try. And you got, you know, he doesn't have the quick feet of Roger back there. But then later in the game, you saw what he can do and what a healthy Wade Egan can do around the middle of the ruck when his forwards are on the front foot.
Yep, James Graham says it best. He will pull your pants down around the middle of the ruck there if you're not careful. Jason Livingston from Facebook agrees that Latrell should move to centre. I did see a comment on Instagram roll through from Back Yourself Podcast who said the Rabbitohs are now 0-12 in recent games against the spread.
Yeah. Continue. I think they mentioned that in our show 3 weeks ago when it was like 9 in a row and it's 12 in a row, which I think, to put in context, like that's a 1 in 4,000 probability. If you were just rolling that bet against the Rabbitohs each week.
Wow. I'll tell you what, I know this fun fact. The longest ever roulette streak of one color is 37 in a Mexican casino. And apparently dudes were on the phone trying to refinance their house because they wanted to stay on red, thinking eventually it has to come. So that's not quite South Sydney territory.
With a roulette wheel, I'm not one to believe in like, oh, it's been a streak of this many reds or this many blacks, so I'm going to ride it, right? It's every spin should be independent. But when I'm seeing 37 in a row, obviously leading up to that, it's 21 in a row, 22 in a row. Like, I would actually ride that side because you get double up odds anyway. And maybe there's some bias. I don't know the specifics there. But it's the same as I said on Tuesday about South Sydney. Like, it's not a coin flip every week because we can look back in retrospect and we know that there's something wrong with this footy team and they're not living up to their ability. So therefore, these bets, even though the line has tried to account for performance, it's continuously overrated the Rabbitohs, and I was certainly guilty of it myself, you know, last year too. But if we really knew what was going on at the club, you know, a lot of these lines have been way off the mark, quite clearly, like as you see in this one where they lost by 30 points.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, bookies are trying to make the lines a 50-50. So I guess the question is, can the Rabbitohs do the great Mexican roulette wheel and fail to cover the spread 37 games in a row? I'm going to bet no on that if there's a market. As Colt says, Ilias broke his leg. That sucks for the Rabbitohs, as does their next games coming up. As you said, Sharkies, then they get a bye. They need that. But then they're against the Storm and Panthers, teams they did beat last year, but that's they're a different Rabbitohs side this year. So it's going to be a really tough slog for the Bunnies fans. Let's move on to one of those teams we just mentioned, the Panthers. They went down to the Manly Seagulls at Four Pines Park, 32-18. And I will say I saw this coming. I did have a feeling throughout the week that the Panthers were due a loss and Manly would be up for this one. But the one thing that worried me, and I this is ironic because I am a milestone bettor. I like players to score on their big games. I like teams to win for big players. But I did wonder, would the daily Cherry Evans breaking the all-time club record of games played be too much of a distraction? Would the focus be stolen away from the football aspect of things and more so on a remarkable occasion? But in the end, DCE and his Manly teammates honour him perfectly with an impressive win over a Panthers side who, for mine, probably looked the worst they have in a while. I did think Manly got plenty of calls from the referee in this game, but I also believe they were the better side, so I'm happy to turn a blind eye in that regard. Manly also came up with 3 intercepts, which is the same amount of penalties they conceded. So they created opportunities. Their discipline was high, whereas the Panthers' discipline was not high. They conceded 11 penalties, which is the most they have in a while also. Where this game was won, though, simply, it was Manly's forward pack. And that's crazy because on paper, they do not match it with Penrith's forward pack at all, even with the missing players they have, such as Scott Sorensen. But they restricted James Fisher-Harris, Moses Leota, Liam Martin and Lindsay Smith, 4 grand final players to less than 100 metres. So that's a brilliant effort there. How did you see this one? And I missed the preview show. Who did you tip coming into this one?
I didn't have a bet on it, but I thought that Penrith should still win it. You know, I just thought Penrith's a better side than Manly. The Fish is back. And that was the key, was how could Manly handle the Penrith forwards? But looking back on it, even I didn't feel like +3.5 was a great value line with Manly. I knew the spot suited Manly at home. I could definitely see them rebounding because they were awful against St. George. Like they were, that could have been their worst performance of the year. And Turbo looked like he was, you know, his mind was somewhere else. But I actually saw Turbo interviewed through the week and he just looked so confident and he had a big smile on his face. And I thought he's going to be up for a big game, as you knew DCE would. And DCE was so influential. Has one moment where he puts a little grubber in for himself and Edwards, who was by far Penrith's best on ground, you know, scoops and scores 90 meter like kick return, which was a hard to even pick up. And you go, well, you know, Cherry, did he force the issue a little bit? It's not long after that that he's creating for himself and others and turning the game back into Manly's favour. You said you're happy to turn a blind eye, I suppose, as was the bunker, because the most controversial moment is Tommy Talau goes for an intercept, drops the ball cold, you know, and it's Cola that picks it up. And I thought the ref's just letting it play out because, you know, it might end in a try. So just let's check it. And I'm watching Cola streak away going, the smart move is to get tackled. You know, it's very rare you actually see that happen. But like a really heads up player would let the opponent tackle him because the ref has let it play on. But Cola goes and scores and everyone kind of knows it's going to get pulled back. And let us know what you thought in the comments. They showed the replay. And the funny thing is that as Tommy Talau does go for the intercept, I do see the argument that it kind of like hits his hand and kind of like diverts straight downwards. And obviously the argument was that it actually went a little bit back towards his try line. But I feel like for 115 years of rugby league, that's been called a knock on. Like, let me say something that also might be controversial. And don't do this if you're a Broncos fan, but watch Ben Hunt's drop in the 2015 grand final. Like, if they had a challenge, like I actually don't think Ben Hunt dropped it forward. I'm sorry to bring that moment up for the people that don't want to hear it. I don't think he dropped it forward, but I do think it's a traditional knock on that we can all accept, you know. And this was kind of a similar case where if you want to get your protractor out and decide which way the ball was projected, there's a slight case. But the reality is I feel like we all are comfortable to knock on. So it's a huge moment because it would have been Penrith fresh set. Instead, it's 6 points to Manly. But, yeah, Manly really took the game away from Penrith in the second half with those couple of quick-fire tries, which Cherry had his fingerprints all over. And it does go back to me. Those are the type of bets I've really got to do a better job of finding. It's where you take the team that is not the better team. Manly's not going to finish higher on the ladder than Penrith this year. But on that given afternoon at Four Pines, milestone game for DCE, you just knew they were going to give it everything. And Penrith had already kind of poured it all out to get the big win and prove what they were capable of without Nathan. It was another story to be able to back that up, which, you know, I knew that they weren't going to be able to maintain the level which they did show us against the Roosters the week before.
Absolutely, mate. Don't forget to invoice Ben Hunt after this show. We didn't get many best bets this weekend, so we've got to make our money somehow. Benny Hunt, great friend of the show. I do see a lot of people asking, do you think Manly are contenders or pretenders? And a lot of questions about our overall thoughts on their performance. Ultimately, I've still got them missing the 8. This was a great performance by them, but I just don't think they can replicate this same energy on occasions that won't mean as much throughout the year. And the challenge is always consistency for sides. But let's move to the Dolphins.
And you're still lucky. You're still very lucky to play Penrith without Nathan Cleary. Like, as good as it is to beat a Penrith team that had won 3 in a row, and I'm doing it 3 weeks in a row as well as 3 comps in a row. it's very lucky you catch them without Cleary. To win a big home game, milestone game, it doesn't tell you everything about a team, as you say. You want to see a higher level of performance on a more consistent basis, which I haven't seen from Manly yet. Remember, they lost by 20 points to St. George. No, sorry, they didn't lose by 20. They did only lose that like 20-12 in the end. But they were comfortably beaten by St. George the week before. So, yeah, if you're going to cherry pick a team's best performances, then as we get to the next game, you're going to tell me the Tigers can make the grand final. But again, West came a little bit back down to earth at the hands of my Finns.
Mate, I just got one final point. Sorry to lag on that Panthers game, but one thing that I actually thought watching this game was, you know, Cleary's on $1 million at the Panthers. The Tigers have just signed Jerome Luai for $1.2 million. You look at the grand final against a better side where the stakes were up, and Cleary was able to elevate his side and come up with that remarkable comeback. Whereas Jerome Luai in a regular season game against the Seagulls, who are a lower-ranked lower-ranked side than the Broncos, you'd say, wasn't really able to take over that game and step up in the big moments. So maybe some concern there for the Tigers and the price tag. But let's move to the Tigers. They were defeated by the Dolphins at Suncorp 26-16. You know what? I actually thought it was a pretty good game of footy. I wasn't expecting it coming in, but it was entertaining enough. And the storyline for me was a rookie coach in Benji Marshall up against his mentor in Wayne Bennett, who is not only someone who Benji has learnt most of his coaching aspects from, but also the most experienced coach in the game. In the end, I think both coaches leave with their heads held high. I'm sure the Tigers would have liked to have had their third consecutive win. It hasn't happened for like over 10 years or something crazy, I believe. But in the end, the effort they shown once again was remarkable. They didn't drop their heads. They had plenty of chances to fold and turn over like the old Tigers would have and let the Dolphins run away with this. But they chose to continue to turn up despite injuries, head injury assessments, etc. Meanwhile, for the Dolphins, I would say they were clinical at stages, but I thought they lacked the overall polish of what we would consider an elite side in this competition. There are probably sides like the Panthers and Storm, and I know we're getting up there with the elites when I say that, but they probably would have put this Tigers side to the sword despite the effort they've shown. I don't think the Dolphins' spine was bad, with that being said. I thought their spine was pretty good, particularly Isaiah Katoa, but it was more disruptions on their end as well. They had a lot of injuries and head injury assessments and disruptions to their lineup. So all in all, a great win for the Dolphins, which puts them right up near the top of the ladder, and positive signs for the Tigers as well, even in a loss. No doubt you love this one, though, as a Finn supporter, mate. How did you see it?
And you said it, like, Isaiah Katoa really coming into his own. And that's another player that was pinched. Like, he was a few spots away from getting a start in Penrith, but it shows the crazy depth that they had down there. But what a find he might end up being as well. We know, like, what the Hammer's all about, and the Finns got off to a good start, which you knew was going to be key. Because it looked a really even matchup on paper. So really looking forward to this one. But the Finns then took total control and then it looked like they'd run away with it. So you have to give West a lot of credit for not going away. Like, they're down, I think, at least 14 points in this game and then pull it back to, you know, a four-point game. And there's a little bit of a trend emerging. And I don't know what to make of this, but I mean, 3 weeks ago, I come up with my Winnie's Kitchen multi and I picked Sam Walker, you know, a guy that doesn't score too often, but I had Sam Walker to score a try on a Sunday, no dice. And then he scores a double the following week. It's like, yeah, thanks, Sam. Couldn't have helped the fellas out last week. And then on Easter Monday, I had Futape. You know, he hasn't scored a try in the NRL yet, but he's a young gun and I needed him. You know, that multi wins if Futape scores on Easter Monday. Not to be, Olam gets a double. And what happens the following week? Futape scores not once, but twice. So it's like, yeah, you couldn't share the love a little bit. So that doesn't count for anything in terms of helping us win a bet. But it kept the Tigers in the game, although the Finns closed it out. But despite the fact that the Dolphins lost Gilbert, I suppose they haven't had too many other major personnel losses. And they've played with a lot of spirit, and we knew that the recruits this year were going to add extra energy to this side. I worry a little bit about the fact that the team ran out of steam last year, where I know that they front-loaded a lot of their preparation and effort and fitness and weren't able to carry it on. But maybe this year, the next step in the development is to now push that performance, you know, and sustain it further through the year. And the Finns have really set themselves up well to do so. Now, the only team in the comp to win like to win every game after losing in round one, right? Because that you could have said that about the Panthers, but they lost again, and you could have said that about West as well. I know the Dolphins have had a bye, but still, if you look at how many points the Dolphins have scored this season, they're up there with anyone, and they've already had a bye, so they haven't even played every week. So it's super positive signs for the Finns, and it's one of those games where you don't take a lot away from West.
Well, the Undertaker was on the Finns -3.5. He says he's disappointed you weren't on with him. And Colt said, "Lol, I thought of you, Winnie, when Fatape scored." Who was the Winnie's Kitchen try scorer this week? Was it Talungi again?
Yes, I went Talungi again. So if there is some sort of omen, I feel like, you know, a couple of times is, once it's a coincidence. Two, there's something a bit more than that. And three, we'll have to be watching very, very closely. So who've Para got next week? Maybe Talungi's in for a double.
Cowboys at Combank, Talungi back at home. Backs against the wall for the Eels. The young rookie half scores a hat trick. I'm putting the bet on as we speak. Next game, let's go there. Cowboys defeat the Titans at Queensland Country Bank Stadium, 35-22. And what can I say? Cowboys were firmly in control for majority of this game until Chad Townsend opened the door ever so slightly for my Titans and got a sin bin in the 60th minute. That gave the Titans life and belief, which was obviously fun to watch as a Titans fan for a period there. I haven't been that excited watching us in a while, but it's also really unfortunate it took a mistake from the other side to spark our team into action. You know, good sides already have that belief. They always believe they can win. They're always going after the ball. They're always playing great football, like the Broncos, for example, even whilst they were under strength. But I do think for the Titans, it is about baby steps again this season. Like, they have new structures under Dez Hasler, no Captain Tino, less than 1% of NRL tipsters tipped us this round. So I take the positives that there were. You know, more than 99% thought we'd lose, and they were right. Fair enough. For the Cowboys, I think they'll be really happy with 70 minutes of that performance. And at the end of the day, they still won 13+. Like, it's still a big win, despite a very poor 10-minute period for them, one man down. For the Titans, I just think you can see we're really lacking without Tino. Like, all of our forwards were easily contained. In terms of energy, our debutant and teenager, Josiah Pahulu, brought the most, and that's not good enough from our senior forwards. But the Cowboys' completion rate was only 68%, Winnie. They did chance their arm through 13 offloads, so they were playing expansive and creative. But I can tell you right now, a 68% completion rate, you can't put that against a side different to the Titans, and you could be in big trouble. But at the end of the day, look, Titans were dominated. Cowboys had roughly 500 more meters, and 100 of those were post-contact. So it was a tough afternoon as a Titans fan, besides a small window of joy. How did you see this one as a neutral?
I feel like you're underselling it a little bit. Sora says that's 1% too many that tipped the Titans. Because I do feel like there was a real period of this game where the Titans had a chance to win. And what I'm referring to is when the Titans had actually cut it to a 6-point game and for at least another 90 seconds or a couple of minutes, were playing with a man advantage. You know, the big mistake you're referring to is right after the Titans had scored a try, Chad Townsend goes into the bin for a hip drop tackle, and the Titans did score again. Did they score at least twice in that period? So that, yeah, as I said, they cut the score from 28-6, it was 28-22. You know, and I said on Tuesday I was that close to playing Cowboys -15.5, and I reflect on this game, and I think the Cowboys were the right side because they won by 13, and they would have been very disappointed that they let it get that close. Like, they would not have been happy at all. And that really says a lot. But the crazy thing is that the most obvious bet of the week, which I'm glad I didn't take, and I rarely will be on the bet that almost everybody else wants to be on, actually didn't win, despite the fact that the Cowboys covered it by halftime, 16-0 halftime. And the Titans, it was just more of the same. And they're doing soul searching behind the goalposts time after time. But you just don't know. You don't see the toughness. Like, I know that the Titans have got a bit of skill and some attacking spark. And it's awesome to see what Jaden Campbell can do when he gets little openings, for sure. And he had a hand in that comeback. But any team can, you know, maybe score two or three tries in a row. when the run goes their way, and certainly when the opponents, you know, suffers a couple of penalties and a sin bin. But you've got to be tough enough to actually defend through adversity and defend your way to a comeback. And that's where the Titans fell short. Although it was cruel too, because the Titans, as I said, they're genuinely in the game at 28-22, still with a man advantage. And then early shift, and Brimson throws an intercept where he's dead set looking, felt, you know, straight between the eyes, and throws him the ball and gift wraps an intercept try completely against the run of play for what it had been for that last 10, 15 minutes. And that shut the gate. Then the Cowboys were back out to 12-point lead. Chad came back on, actually kicked a field goal, you know. And then it was probably an exciting 5 minutes if you had the line, because the Titans did have to preserve the, you know, the plus 16.5, which was the prevailing line. They did enough, and you're probably frustrated if you had the Cowboys, because it's one of those games where it wasn't that hard. Everybody would have crafted same game multis and picked a few try scorers, and there's a fair chance you could have had a few of them, you know, like Drinky scoring, Felt scoring, you know, and Cowboys winning big was pretty logical. But if you had Cowboys 13 plus, happy days for you. But if you needed the Cowboys to cover that line, you'll be quite disappointed that period of play meant that the Titans got their first cover of the year. So unlike Souths, they've at least covered against the spread this year.
Yeah, and when that line was 22-28, I don't know if it was the bet talking to me. So full transparency for our viewers, I had 3 units on Titans to win and Jaden Campbell to score, paying 45 units back. So I don't know if it was the bet speaking, man, but I was starting to feel it. I was like, can we come back? But as soon as Brimo threw that intercept pass, I knew, that's the dagger in our heart. Because we're not a resilient team yet. We're not a team that can kind of cop that and go, let's go, boys. We can still win this. We're just not there yet. So that's okay. It was still some positive signs for my team. And it was exciting while it lasted, because that would have been an awesome win, 42 plus units. Not to be, that's all right.
Like, you've had a couple of bets on the Titans this year where you genuinely believe, like, the Dragons, you know, the opening game, or was the other one, like, down in Belmore, Desi's return, like, where you genuinely believe that this one was more of a hopeful, this one was more of, like, a long shot. And I kind of felt the same way, like, the Titans could get done by 40 today. You know, that's how I was kind of feeling. And after the first 50 or 60 minutes, it looked like that might be the case. But it was a higher variance game where you also thought, but if the Titans actually can get some confidence, they could do something maybe. And yeah, that was a short-lived period. You got the Jaden Campbell try. And yeah, I mean, again, I feel like all I've done is talked about the Titans, because I don't know, there's not a lot to say about the Cowboys. It was a pretty stock standard performance. Jeff in the comments said we didn't get out of third gear. And it's kind of true. They slept walked. And once they had that comfortable lead, they never really thought they would relinquish it. Although I think Peyton got a little bit nervous in the box. Is there anything else in the wash up? I mean, Labor, the knee injury doesn't look good. So that's
apparently an ACL.
Very disappointing for Cows. Is it a likely ACL?
Suspected, yeah. Yeah,
and, you know, and that looked like they'd really strengthened that right center position and found a young stud to put there. So that's a real shame.
Jerry Piper says 3 units. Lowell Clarkey is a Dero punter. Mate, if you knew how many units I've lost on the Titans this year, you'd have a much better spray for me than that. It would make a grown man sick. But I believe in my team, even when I shouldn't. All right, let's go to the final. Actually, Winnie, we've got a comment from X here.
Well, look, let me just clarify that as well, though, because even when people talk about units, I do feel like people have different definitions of a unit, because some people will split their bankroll into 100 units, some will split
one,
it into 1,000
units. 100.
So, but the thing is, like, it's all relative. It doesn't even matter how many dollars you're putting on. But to some people, 2 or 3 units would be like what they would put on like a 50-50 bet. But your bet today was like 15-1. So it's, you know, it's a bit of a long shot. But as I said, it was probably more optimistic than anything else.
Oh, mate, like my unit's $100. So it was $300 to win 4.5. You know what I mean? Like, I'm willing to take that risk, because it would just make it so much cooler if we got our first win. I've backed us for bigger in our first 2 games, if I'm honest. So, look, we'll get a win eventually. I just hope that I'm on it when that time comes. But, yeah, I won't hold my breath. That's for damn sure. Let's go to the final game of the round, man. I still can't believe this one, even though we've been live for 50 minutes now. Raiders defeat the Eels at JO Stadium 41-8. And I'll be completely honest, I favoured the Eels heavily coming into this one. I expected a much more polished performance from them, particularly Dylan Brown in the seven role with another week there at training to work on his combination. Thought he came up with some really poor kicks in this one and didn't really take control of the side, but it wasn't all on him. The Eels overall were super poor and they just didn't threaten. Like in that first half, they had 6 errors, 17 missed tackles, 8 ineffective, 39% completion or something really, really poor. Just not good enough. And, you know, the Raiders had excuses at stages. Tarpany and Mariota went down with injuries. Rapana was in and out of the game with a knee injury. He was off for most of that first half. So the Raiders had the excuses. The Eels didn't. And they just didn't turn up. And I think a telling sign for me of where the Eels' effort was at in this game was Jamal Fogarty's field goal. Like, he's in front of the post. He set up for it the previous tackle. He goes to do it again, and not one Eels player is pressuring him there. That allows them to take a 13-point lead, which, you know, in the context of this game, wasn't massive, but it could have been. They didn't know that at the time. We moved to the second half, and the Eels didn't really improve at all. It just, their attack didn't flow. Defensively, they were out-muscled. The Raiders' outside backs had an absolute field day with multiple line breaks and huge meters gained, and just nothing improved for the Eels in that second half. If anything, it got worse as the Raiders team just completely overtook them and outplayed them in every facet of rugby league. Disappointing for me because I did have a bet on the Eels there head-to-head, and I think you had a best bet on the Eels at the plus margin. So did you see that game similar to me?
Yeah, quite shocked, you know, especially when the Raiders lose Rapana early and score the first try, although Hudson Young did his best to try and blow it. He would have scored himself and throws the flick pass in field, but it ends up with Sebastian Chris getting to a ball that goes to ground, but scoring under the sticks. But look, even 8-0, even 12-0, I was kind of thinking like about that Manly game where Parra did come back from 14-0. I suppose you have to say like they had Mitchell Moses for that one, but you know that can't be your only excuse because I still would say that Parra's got more top-end talent than the Raiders. But, I mean, am I getting that part wrong? I thought what really stood out to me was that you think of the Raiders as this gritty team that they want to be in an arm wrestle. They want to be in the trenches. They're going through the front door. But they were so willing to shift. They scored all these backline tries today. And they scored all these tries from inside their own half. And, I'm not really used to seeing that. But they're harnessing the gifts that they've got on the outside, you know, like the comments there about Strange, like what a great running half he is. You like they look better than last year when you had Jack Whiten, who was the highest paid player at the club. He's been a breath of fresh air, Strange. And then, you know, I'm talking about when you get the likes of Savage, the ball in space, and Timoko as well. As much as he takes the shortest strides, he's so explosive too and so hard to handle. We saw that. So I would like to see the Eels do a bit more. I know they don't have the best back line, but you think that Gutho can chime in there and Dylan Brown, you know, what I can say about Brown is always in the picture defensively trying to save tries, but not the opportunity. I couldn't understand why Parra's forward pack couldn't match it with Canberra and then Parra couldn't get their equal opportunity, but it's just the Raiders playing far more positively on the front foot. A big difference as well is Fogarty, and he's been mentioned in the comments too. Like his kicking game can really help Canberra take control, whereas that's obviously the biggest aspect that Parra are missing right now with Moses, and maybe that's the biggest part I got wrong in this game. But for Parra to no-show and for all their talk out of the Tigers game to be, we wanted an easy win there, you know, we weren't prepared to do the tough stuff, and then your following game, you're going to go and give up 40 points, you know, to a Raiders team that I still don't think will make the finals. That's pretty, pretty poor, you know. So it's a combination of the Raiders red hot. But if other people can figure it out, they're doing better than me too, because like this Raiders team was so good this afternoon. It's the same team that let the Sharks score 30 straight points last week and threw away a victory. So it is tough from week to week when these sides are fluctuating so dramatically. But Parra have really got to, you know, figure out if they've got their best spine combination. Maybe you've got to pick, I don't recall the name of the fellow that's playing New South Wales Cup, but a genuine seven and move Brown back to six, Talangi back to the centres for a start. As for Canberra, you're definitely excited with the young talent and the speed that this side possesses. And I know that we already mentioned the game, but Rapana injured really early reminded me too that Kieran Foran got injured in the first half for the Titans again. That's not an excuse, and they still covered the line anyway, but just things that you just get sick of seeing after a while.
Yeah, definitely. That was an unfortunate part for the Titans there. The Eels don't have no such excuses, though, and I do agree with you. They will have to make changes to that spine next week. It could be Lussick out, hands in, but I do agree with you. I think that Dylan Brown at seven just isn't working for them at the moment. It takes away from his best ability to control that left edge and create opportunities out there for strike weapons like Sean Lane, Mike Asebo, etc. So I'd be moving him back to six, trying to find that genuine seven. And as DJ touched on YouTube, this is a Raiders side that couldn't win 13-plus last year. They scraped into the finals, one of the worst for and against we've ever seen. This year, they're a completely different side with young, energized players in key positions. And, you know, besides the fact I was on the Eels, this was a fun game to watch for the Raiders tonight. They brought a really exciting style of play, and that's something we don't associate with the Raiders. We associate a slower style and a gritty style and a wearing down the team style that isn't really fun to watch. So that's good for the Raiders winning. As I say, it's another feather in their cap come finals time. They can win games in different fashion because you need to be ready for everything when finals rolls around. But I think that will just
And that was the last thing I needed. I said it at the top of the show, but I'll say it again too. The mixed matchup was Knights to outscore Raiders. And I felt more confident that in the Raiders winning than the Knights. And look, I was really happy with 30 points output. And you come into this game and you're a very strong favourite. And even when Canberra had that lead, you still feel like it's a fairly tight game. And if anything, the Eels have reduced their margin for error, so they're going to have to be even more intense second half. But Canberra broke Paris back. And as we see Raider, as you're saying, we're not accustomed to seeing Canberra play that way. So isn't it just ideal that they do when we need them to be held under 30 points? Others are questioning, you know, I just said that comment. I don't think the Raiders are a top eight team for me in my mind, but do you disagree with me? I mean, they're currently fifth, they're three wins from five, and next week they have your Titans, and that's at home as well. So a lot of people are going to say that that's a very likely, 4-2, and many will probably say the Raiders are a top eight side. I'm probably just one to not super overreact, and that you've heard me with a similar sentiment around Manly, like after a good win or whatever, I don't instantly say, oh, now they're making finals. Like I rarely say that about a team after one game. But am I too slow to read the tea leaves, you know, because there's other teams that I'll give multiple chances. You know, trust me, I assess myself as much as I do assess the 17 teams in the NRL. Come up with what I hope are the best plays. You know, very minor detail. Some people will judge me based on how the odds of my tip shape closer to the game. And it's kind of a concept of closing line value, right? So in this case, we got Parramatta plus 2.5, but the line closed like 1.5 or even a half point. So that would actually suggest that we were on a good bet. But as I always say, it counts for very little when you get shown to be wrong. It's always good to get a better number than the close, but when you're blown out, it's not going to help you. It's not going to show up. Long term, it does show up, but in the short term, it's not going to help with the profit loss column.
That's it, mate. It's like fixing a horse to add bigger odds than what it closes on the tote. You can look at the ticket and think, oh, I'm on a beauty here, but it's still got to go out and win the damn race. And in this case, win the damn game, which the Eels didn't even come close to, unfortunately, mate. But that's all right. There's a lot of fluctuations of teams form week to week. It's a difficult start to the season, but I know you'll be back and I'll be back next week to break it all down. And
I know we've hit the hour mark, mate, but I do want to say happy birthday for the weekend. I know it wasn't happy returns for us, but you can close the show if you like. Is there a highlight from Vegas, mate? Because obviously we haven't seen you the last three shows. Got to spend a week over there. Take us out with any reflections on your trip.
Mate, I think when you would have been here doing the recap, I would have been in a helicopter going over the Las Vegas Strip at nighttime, which is, for those of our viewers that haven't been to Las Vegas, it's another planet, mate. There's just that many lights and signs and people. It's something you can't imagine in Australia. It's like Sydney on steroids. So yeah, that was really cool. Did a flight over the Grand Canyon as well, which was something that, you know, you see photos of it, but when you actually see it in person, you're like, wow, this is a really, really cool piece of landscape. So yeah, overall, a great trip, mate, besides Timmy Zoo losing. But apart from that, mate, Vegas didn't steal too much of my money. Did lose a little bit, of course. But overall, mate, no complaints at all. It was a really, really good time. And yeah.
Not as much of your money as the Titans have taken this year. But look,
no one will come close to that.
We've spent an hour talking about the footy. And these are the hard shows to front up for. Like that game that's still on the screen, that Raiders Eels, that really did take away my mojo. That hurt me, that game, because, you know, there's a same gamer. There's a best bet on the line. There's a mixed matchup, you know, and it all swings. It's gone either before you or against you type thing. But these are important shows to do. And as I said to you, it is still a really long season, like around five. So the important thing is the process. As Jerry says, you can't eat value. No, but long term, you keep finding value, you'll find you'll win more than you lose. So that's what the goal will be. And it's under 48 hours until we be back live to do our best for round six. So we'll see everyone then. As everyone says in the comments, happy birthday, Clarkie. Have a great start to your week, guys. And Lego.